Failure is not an option.
What difference at this point does it make?
Nobody said it was going to be fun.
This is Real Talk, a fearless, poignant, and intrepid show where truth speaks louder than words. This is Real Talk with your host, Audrey Russo.
The shame, not of this world, so we live on the run. We keep our eyes set, on what is to come.
It happened before. It will happen again. It's just a question of when.
Time's a luxury we don't have.
Hello, everybody. This is Colonel Alan West, the old school patriot, and you're listening to Real Talk with my dear friend, Audrey Russo. And if you don't listen, well, let me tell you something. I have skills that I developed over a certain period of time. And I will find you, and I will make you listen to Audrey Russo.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us, this is Audrey Russo, and you're listening to Real Talk. The lies are still in the airwaves concerning the September 11, 2012 attack in Benghazi. But the American people are not satisfied with the deceit perpetrated by the Obama administration, the media, or the failure and refusal of Congress to uncover the truth about that fateful night. I have the tremendous pleasure of welcoming the following gentlemen to join us to blow the lid off more details on Benghazi. My friend General Paul Valley, a co-founder of the Citizens Commission on Benghazi, and he has brought with him William Potel, Nicholas Noe, and Joshua Salmon, who were all on duty at that time. It's my great pleasure to give a Real Talk welcome to Paul, Will, Nick, and Josh. Welcome back, Paul, and welcome, guys. It's great to have you with us.
Thank you. Well, happy to be with you, Audrey, as usual.
Well, Paul, I'm going to ask that you would lay the groundwork here so the listeners will understand exactly what we're doing. So why don't you go ahead?
Well, thank you, Audrey. I'm very happy to have the opportunity to bring the American people and President Trump up to date on some very revealing facts about what really happened those 13 hours, September 11th, 2012. This is very revealing, and we have three men who are on duty during those 13 hours, and they're going to have an opportunity to tell you what happened. But after that event, Admiral Lyons and General McInerney and I formed the Citizens Commission for Benghazi because we felt the American people weren't getting the facts of what really went down. So working with Charles Woods, the father of Tyrone Woods, one of the four who was killed during those 13 hours, I promised him we would do all we could to get the truth out. And so with the Citizens Commission on Benghazi, we interviewed, investigated, we took that intelligence information and we gave it to basically the Senate and Congress. And of course, as you remember, Trey Gowdy then headed up the congressional inquiry into Benghazi. And so we provided him everything that we had at that time. And the more specific things that happened on the day of the congressional hearings, I was asked to go on Fox News with Geraldo Rivera on a late show, and Geraldo interviewed me. He said, "General Valle, you went on the air today and said that Hillary Clinton, General Dempsey, and Leon Panetta, the Secretary of Defense, were not telling the truth about what happened during that 13 hours. Two of those points being that there weren't enough assets in the area to launch a rescue operation, and that there wasn't enough intelligence that we could, without harming people who would be involved in that rescue operation. And what you're going to find out today, ladies and gentlemen, three men who were on duty during those 13 hours, and the fact that all three of those individuals lied to Trey Gowdy and the Congressional Committee. And for that, they've got to be held accountable. That's why what we're talking about today, Audrey, yes, we've got to get this information to President Trump, because it's another scandal, it's a cover-up, and we want the American to know, as well as the families of the four deceased that we lost there in Benghazi that night. So with that, Audrey, I'll turn it back to you, and you can bring on our really brave patriots, Nick, Will, and Josh.
Yes, absolutely. You know, guys, what I'd like to begin with is that you would give the listeners your position or your job that night and what your location was. So can we start with Will?
I was in charge of the early warnings and indication of the watch floor, which is the J2 intelligence floor at CENTCOM in Tampa, Florida. And is that as far as you want me to go, or do you want me to continue?
You can continue. Go right ahead.
Okay, well, my watch floor was unusual because we cover the Middle East, and AFRICOM normally covers places like Libya. But in this situation, AFRICOM was a newly formed command, and for 5 months prior to 9/11/2012, we had been doing intelligence operations for AFRICOM's folks as well as ours. So we were spun up on exactly what they were doing, as well as with NATO. And as the day went on, we had a huge training exercise we call Internal Look going on at that same time. The training exercise encompassed about 75% or more of all the personnel at CENTCOM. So all of us were on duty that night conducting a training exercise. Mm-hmm. And just to back up 1 second, a lot of the intelligence stuff that we had sent forward as a warnings to the Libyans and the embassy in Libya and to our own personnel were dire threats, and they were very corroborated threats. They weren't acted on. But the night of the attack at 9/11 in Benghazi, what took place was we all started to have a panic at CENTCOM, but we were not allowed to stop the training exercise. We had real-world personnel tracking stuff, but in the Middle East. Because at the same time Benghazi attacks took place, our embassy in Cairo, Egypt, was overrun by what we were told was approximately 2,500 local nationals, 90% of which were Muslim Brotherhood. Mm. In both instances, we were told the State Department was taking lead on both of these, and in Egypt allowing the Morsi government to regain control, and that the situation in Benghazi was being handled. And this came down by the commander. But I have never in my military career seen anyone conducting a training exercise when there's a real-world attack. We were not allowed to stop our training exercise for 8.5 hours after the attacks began.
Right, right.
It was a very big problem to me.
Right. John, I'm sorry. Will you continue?
Well, in addition to that,
yes, I'm sorry.
In addition to that, mm-hmm. there was a lot of data, intelligence data, that was available
right
for that evening to show where forces were, where personnel were. And these were all factual data material.
Right. I'm sorry to interrupt you. I'm actually going to ask you some questions about that in a minute. I just want to give Josh and Nick a chance. But I am going to ask you questions about that coming up very soon. Josh, would you share with us what your position was, what your location and what your job was that evening?
Yes. My position was a operations intelligence analyst with the 603rd Air Operations Center in Ramstein, Germany.
Okay.
At the time.
Right. And Nick?
I worked with Josh at the 603rd AOC at Ramstein, Germany. That's where I was. So
okay.
I I was in combat reports there in combat operations, and Josh was in operations intelligence.
Okay. Keep in mind, Audrey, all three of them are command and control centers.
Yes.
In Tampa, Florida, as well as Ramstein Air Force Base. And they have all these big monitors up on the walls as they're following what's going on around the world, and specifically the Middle East. Mm-hmm. And so they were tracking the air assets, the land assets, the naval assets that existed in the Middle East at that time. So this is real world stuff that these gentlemen are looking at in their various commands. So I just wanted to make that clear for everybody.
Yes, absolutely. Well, let me start with this. As you mentioned, Paul, the Benghazi attack wasn't a brief one. It was 13 hours long. So is it reasonable to assume that they could have been rescued? Who would like to take that?
Absolutely. This is Will. Okay. Absolutely.
So it was
There's
reasonable.
No question.
Okay. All right. Now, I'd like to direct this question to Josh, Nick, and then Will, whoever would like to begin. Could you tell us, and I think that Will is probably going to start out with this because I think you were about to touch on this. Could you tell us about the DOD tracking and communication systems used at the time of the Benghazi event?
Josh, did you want to start or did you want me to?
You go right ahead.
Will, you can go ahead. I'll follow you.
Yes, sir. All right. So as far as the tracking mechanisms go, there are multiple tracking systems we have. One is called human intelligence. Another is called signals intelligence. Another tracking system we use is a global command and communication systems, or the GEECS. And all these systems let us know about situations going on, to include what's called operational systems. The operational systems are of those personnel on the ground reporting what's happening right there. In addition to that, we also had our ties to NATO and to other allied nations that were in the vicinity and their information as well.
And Josh or Nick, did you want to add to that?
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Josh.
Okay, so from where we sat in the watch desk, one of our watch desks were keeping track of all the flights that were currently flying. Okay. We have track of every asset that's around the area in AFRICOM and UCOM.
What specifically, Josh, were you looking at? What kind of aircraft and where were they?
What kind of aircraft? Mostly unmanned. Predators, Reapers. I mean, we kept track of even manned aircraft that were coming in the area, but at that time of night, normally, it was going to be your unmanned that was going to be doing the flying at that point. So my counterpart was actually doing that while I was getting the timeline down from the entity that called us to actually inform us of what was going on.
Okay, and Nick, did you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, I do. In regards to what you asked, if they were in the area, we had a lot of different subordinate units that reported to AFRICOM, and my job was to take all those reports and put them together and make the commander's update brief, and also situational reports are called SITREPs. And so I knew when everybody's status, the weapon status, posture level, personnel, everything I knew going on. And so we had jets in Lake and Heath. And we had a rescue team in a place in Africa. I'm not sure if I should go in that, but we had a rescue team, a pararescue team that was ready to go 24 hours a day. So essentially, all these people, mainly, you know, there's all of our assets, there's some people on alert at all times.
Right.
So I just want to put that out there.
So
can I just interject and say that those are known as QRF forces, or quick reaction forces,
okay,
that are on standby.
So basically, listeners who don't know the jargon, they were from many angles, you knew what was going on. Yes?
Yes.
I wanted to speak for a second here about, ask a question about the airspace over Africa. Was that difficult to work with?
No.
Or was there anything about the airspace there that prevented a rescue?
Dip clearances are very easy to do. All that you have to do is go to the CCO or call the officer down there and get a dip clearance for it, and you can fly over there. It wasn't hard. We did it all the time. So, no, it wasn't very difficult.
Yeah, so there was nothing that would have prevented a rescue concerning the airspace? No, right?
We did it every day. Okay. Nope. There was nothing. Nope.
Yeah. Okay. So, I have a question here about President Obama. why did he not give cross-border authority to rescue the 30 Americans that needed to be rescued? Does anybody know?
Ma'am, listen, I will tell you this. Josh and Nick and myself, we were not in the vicinity of the executive office. We have no idea what was going on there. We could tell you factual perspectives from our locations and what we saw and what we were told. Beyond that, we couldn't speculate on that. Maybe General Vallely could, but we could not.
Okay.
Now, we know, Audrey, that the White House was notified immediately through the Joint Command Center in the Pentagon that something was going down in Benghazi. They have a similar type of situation room in the State Department, so they knew what was going on. But almost immediately, between, from what we know, President Obama and Secretary Clinton, it was decided the Secretary of State Department, would take over the operation for that 13 hours.
Right.
Now, this decidedly was a defense operation rescue mission. State Department doesn't do those kinds of things. But they took control over the Pentagon and issued a stand-down order very early on in that first or second hour. That's why when the gentleman who was at Tampa, when they were on a training exercise, he was diverted from following that world mission. The operation was going on in Benghazi to go ahead with the training mission. So the State Department and White House were fully aware it was intentional, and when they lied in front of Congress, it was decided early on they would not mount a rescue operation. And what they were covering up, Audrey, was an arms deal that was being coordinated by the State Department.
Right.
And we have a gentleman, Mark Turry, who headed up and was involved in the gun-running operation that eventually went to Turkey and Syria. And so that was the big cover-up there.
Yeah.
The point is that these three gentlemen are making, they're watching the assets. They know the air assets. They were spinning up in Svengali. We had air assets in Siginola in Spain. We had special forces. We had the fleet in the Mediterranean Sea. So we had plenty of assets, including these unmanned aircraft, Predators, that could have gone in, that could have been armed, and at least in that third hour could have started operations against the militia forces that were attacking the consulate there, as well as the annex. So that's what we want to lay down here today, Audrey, and get this information to President Trump. Because we didn't mount or even attempt a rescue operation, we lost those four great Americans.
Right, yeah. Again, Paul might be able to answer this. First, I want to preface the next question with a question for clarity. Is there a difference between a stand down and do not rescue? Can anyone answer that for me?
Go ahead, Will.
Yes, sir. The stand down means that we're going to stand in place and hold what we got. We're not going to go forward or take any actions without authorization. So it's not like they have to give a do not rescue order. They can just order us to stand down. And that's exactly what forces did. However, so I'm going to bring this up because this is critical. All personnel in military and in government all take an oath. When you are given directed unlawful orders, which means that orders you should not follow, it is your duty to do what you can to continue working. You're derelict of duty if you fail that. When there are troops on the ground dying and getting hurt and an ambassador, there is no excuse to not execute a mission. And some of the command elements we have heard through, you know, uncorroborated sources were relieved of duty for trying to do that. How is that possible when those are unlawful orders? You cannot follow those.
Right.
I mean, it would be likened to something like, you know, hey, go into a village and start shooting everybody. We don't follow orders like that. We never have. We never will. So that's a concerning aspect of this.
Right. So the question I wanted to follow up there was, because Americans were never given a decisive answer, do we know who made the decision to stand down and when that decision was made? Do we know that at this point?
Yes. We know it came from the White House, through the State Department, through the Pentagon, down to the commands at Ramstein and at Central Command in Tampa, Florida. We do know that.
Okay. So you're saying it came from the White House, so it came from Obama?
Absolutely.
Okay. So now I'd like to know your assessment of the following scenario, whether it's ridiculous or might be close to the truth. That the Obama administration was running guns to the Syrian rebels, Hillary was in charge and was working through Ambassador Stevens. If Stevens was rescued, he would talk and therefore the stand down directive came. Because after all, dead man can't talk. So what are your thoughts on that, Paul?
Well, I think that's the reason there was a stand down and there was no rescue operation ordered. Now, here's the key thing, and these gentlemen will verify this. The chain of command was involved all the way up. And we had generals and admirals, colonels and captains of the Navy at sea who saw that stand down order come down and they cease and desist it. Rather than challenging, as Will pointed out, really a divergent divergence away from a rescue operation into doing business as usual within those command centers. And everybody that was in those command centers knew what was going on, as far as I know. And they would, having worked in many command centers myself. And so we had the assets available to launch that operation. I would say, Will, Josh, and Nick, probably in the second hour, because it takes that long for the communication systems to work. So working in the command and control centers, the Pentagon knowing what's going on, the State Department, the White House National Security staff knew what was going on, and they would not issue a rescue operation. To me, that's negligence of duty, and someone has to be accounted for to do that they didn't perform their mission. And they've got to be taken to task. This is the message, again, that President Trump has to get.
Right. Concerning General Hamm, is it true that he changed his story on three different occasions and never really stood up for the truth about that night? Is that
That's what we understand, yes.
Yes.
Through our investigation, that's what we understand.
Okay.
And I think what Will said, I think there was an admiral that was relieved of duty, and I can't remember his name right now.
For what reason was he...
Well, I think he was probably fighting the no-go order for the rescue operation, as I understand it. But he would have to testify himself, and I wish I could remember his name today, but I don't.
Okay.
It's Admiral Guyette, sir.
That's right. Spell that out, would you, Will?
Guyette.
Okay.
How do you pronounce it?
It's Admiral Guyette, sir.
Guyette.
Okay, good. That's the one. Absolutely. Thank you.
So do you think that the reason he was relieved is because he disobeyed the stand down?
No, he didn't disobey it. He was told not to do it, so therefore he was sort of fighting, as I understand it, the chain of command, and it came down that a little later on that he was relieved of his operation and moved somewhere else.
Huh.
But the Navy would know this. They would have this as a matter of record for sure.
Okay. Well, I'm going to read for the listeners, because you gentlemen have heard this before. For the listeners, this is the letter that Obama sent to Ty Wood's dad, Charles Woods, in response to Mr. Wood's question, if the president's child had been in Benghazi, would the rescue attempt have been more aggressive? And this was the response. On that tragic day, I directed my national security team to do everything possible to respond to the attacks against our people and facilities in Benghazi. The United States government considered a range of options and deployed additional military capabilities. But as our military leaders have said, the military force is needed to carry out that type of operation you describe. We're not close enough to have made a difference. Please know that my actions would have been the same if the attack had been against my own family. The sad truth is that attacks happened so rapidly that U.S. forces could not arrive in time to prevent the loss of our brave Americans. Now, gentlemen, did Obama lie in his response to Mr. Woods?
Of course he did.
Yes.
Absolutely.
100% he did.
Is everyone else feel the same way? Yes.
I know for a fact my chief of ISR came in the morning and was not all too happy that we didn't call anybody in that night. And that was only because a direction of a higher up on the floor who we were to report to. But there is absolutely assets that could have been moved to assist with the situation, for sure.
Did anyone else want to respond to that?
Here's these three gentlemen on duty watching the assets,
yes,
knowing what the chain of command is, getting the word down to cease and desist, and basically that whole chain of command cease and desisted as they were covering up an operation that could have been launched. Now, when you launch a rescue operation, you don't know whether it's going to be successful, but at least you try. And again, in that second hour through the 13th hour, let's say 10 hours, they had a chance to get some assets on the target, whether they were Predators or whether they were F-15s coming out of different bases that we had in the Mediterranean. Italy, for example, we had assets in Germany. We had assets in Spain. Plus, you have the aircraft carrier that had air assets. So, therefore, yes, he did lie, and it was a massive cover-up right from the Pentagon. And your statement about Obama, you can see where that came from and why it was a total lie, and it was an effort not to rescue our Americans.
Yes, and of course, he wasn't the only one to lie. Bold-faced, even to the families, Hillary Clinton did as well. Yes?
Sure.
Blaming it
They're all of deceit and dereliction of duty.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So the listeners want...
Could I mention one thing?
Yes, absolutely. Yes, absolutely.
One other thing was that there were other countries that had troops on the ground that offered assistance, and they were turned down. Because of the nature of that, I don't want to mention them, but I am mentioning the fact that other assistance was being offered that was there on the ground and was denied.
That was the British, right? Well, you can say that was the British, right?
It was the British and the French, and there was another couple of groups, too, that had personnel that they wanted to assist with.
This is unbelievable. I'm listening to this, and then I'm in denial here. Look, the listeners want to know, will there ever be justice for Benghazi? Will anyone be held accountable? Anyone?
If Trump knows about what we're talking about, if President Trump knows this, then he can take action. He's the only one right now that has the courage to do it.
Right. But you were going to say something?
Ma'am.
Yes.
Ma'am, what we're trying to ask for is we're trying to ask the President of the United States to issue an executive order to the Department of Defense with very specific guidelines on information from all the strategic elements involved, which would be like CENTCOM and AFRICOM, as well as the tactical units on the ground that were also tracking these events. This information will allow the president to be able to see the GEIC system is going to be the system that will show where all friendly and NATO and allied assets were, as well as all enemy. And that's the one system, at least if not human and SIGINT intelligence, coming back. And he has the capability to read the clear, the classified material that we can't discuss here. And he would be able to have that done. And he could issue it and get a response within 24 hours and mandate a 30-day, no later than turnaround time for the information. It still exists and resides. If anyone wants to play games and say it's gone, then he has the right to call these ex-commanders and ex-senior NCOs in to talk to them about who issued what orders and where did they come from. If people were relieved. This way we have facts, and we're not dealing with, story time and dark time. We're dealing with facts.
Right.
And that's kind of what we need the president to do, and that way he can hold people accountable and take action, whether they're still in the military or not.
This was a massive cover-up, wasn't this?
Ma'am, could I add something to Will's comment?
Absolutely.
Will, absolutely, and there is a few documents that are specifically from our area where we were working that, if they were declassified, could on paper pinpoint, in addition to your the Geeks program, could pinpoint everything from that day, black and white. If they were declassified, could show that, this in fact was a complete fallacy, and there's something that could have been done, because I'll tell you from experience, there's stuff all over the place that could have been moved at any given time, but with the stand down order, it wasn't really happening. But So with an ATO, an ACO, and a bed down, if the president can declassify that, then he could probably pinpoint, like I said, black and white, in addition to the BICES program, could probably put all the puzzle pieces together and just, you know,
the sit reps. This is Nick here. The sit reps would also provide where all the assets were and their status as well.
So what can the listeners do to bring this to the attention of the president?
Well, doing what we're doing now, more we've tried everything, the president's still being shielded from certain things within the FBI, CIA, and State Department. That's why we've taken the action, and I promised Charles Woods to do this, to get it to the president directly, because we're afraid that he'll be shielded from the real facts, because I know and have confidence that President Trump knows what we're saying today. He will take action, and people will be held accountable.
Right.
We can't leave it to the bureaucracy and the deep state to handle this, Audrey.
Right. So, Paul, what would you like the listeners to do to help bring this to his attention?
Write letters to the president, make calls in, demand it. I don't know whether the congressmen or senators will do anything. They seem to be too incompetent to get too much, as we've seen.
Yeah.
But I would flood the letters to the White House, to the president, and let's go on a real push here to get the truth out and hold people accountable, because we have individuals who are on the scene during those 13 hours that can validate that. And as Will and I think Josh said, they have that in the databases. And unless they scrub their computers like Hillary did, that data is still there somewhere, right, gentlemen?
Yes, sir. Correct. But even if they scrub their computers, the personnel rosters are available, and all those personnel, senior folks, are still available to be depositioned and testify under oath. So they can speak to exactly what happened. And another piece of this is that when this comes out and these facts come out, that's when the president has every legal right to remove these obstructionists from government at his leisure. And we have answers, real answers.
That's excellent. By the way, the Congress is, for their incompetency, they're looking for a raise. But anyway, let's begin with Paul. Where can the listeners follow and support your excellent work?
Well, they can go directly to my organization, my foundation, which is standupamericaus.org, or email me directly at standupamericausa1@gmail.com. I will then provide the information to the Citizens Commission on Benghazi, which is now called the Citizens Commission for National Security in Washington, D.C. So, Audrey, this show has got to get out to as many people as we can in Washington, Alan West, General McInerney, and the others that can spread the word in D.C., and we will spread it through our platform from Stand Up America U.S.
And I want to give Will, Nick, and Joshua the opportunity to share where can the listeners follow any of your work, if you would like to be followed, okay?
I would just issue a challenge to everybody listening, that whether you're a patriot.
This is Will.
Or whether you're somebody that, yes, this is Will.
Okay, go ahead.
If you're a patriot or whether you're somebody that's taken the oath of office, to stand up and start talking to folks. Talk to your churches, talk to your local communities, your leaders, your congressmen, your senators. Just get out there and make a difference. You know, with the internet, we have the ability to do 10, 15 different things a day, and we can speak to audiences just to get the truth. There's nothing worse than a cover-up.
That's right.
Absolutely.
Yes. Anybody else like to add anything or where the listeners can follow you?
I would say Will just said it all right there.
Yeah, and they could filter everything to me at our Stand Up America, and I'll get it back to Will and Josh and Nick, so they don't have to give out their private emails. Why don't you just use the foundation email?
Yes, we'll do that. And I wouldn't ask you to give out your private information. I'm talking about social media here. So, and as always, I'll have these links in my after show, which is now on the live show page. Just go to AudreyRusso.com, click on the honor button, and right under the show description, you'll find all the links and information that Paul just shared. Thanks so much, gentlemen, for your service first and foremost, and your amazing courage in sharing the truth in the face of today's great danger. Will you join us again on the show? Yes?
Absolutely.
Yes, ma'am. Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
Excellent. Until then, may God bless you, your work, and may God save America. Bye for now.